from the studios of Kootenai Co-op Radio, this is Deconstructing Dinner.
Welcome to Deconstructing Dinner, coming to you from the studios of Kootenai Co-op Radio, CJLY, in Nelson, British Columbia. I'm John Steinman, and for the next hour, we'll be deconstructing the latest debate on genetically engineered food that took place in Canada's House of Commons on March 17th, 2010. Deconstructing Dinner has long been at the forefront of covering anything and everything to do with the presence of genetically engineered foods in our food system, also referred to as GMOs, genetically modified organisms. The latest on the issue from Canada's capital is Bill C-474, a bill introduced by Member of Parliament Alex Adamenenko, who acts as the New Democratic Party's critic on agriculture and agri-food and food security. The bill, which was debated for 1 hour on March 17th, is calling for a change in the way genetically engineered seeds are approved in Canada. Back in 2009, Canada's primary market for flax, the European Union, blocked all shipments of Canadian flax after tests there discovered the presence of a genetically engineered variety that was once cultivated until its deregistration in 2001. The proposed bill C-474 was developed with the hope of preventing any future scenario like this unfolding again by requiring that all approvals of GE seeds go through an assessment of the potential harm to export markets, in addition to the already in place health and environmental assessments. In other words, had what this bill is proposing been in place in 1996 when the flax was first permitted for environmental release, this might have prevented the 2009 setback to Canada's flax industry from ever happening. On today's episode, we'll listen to members of Parliament debate this issue, including NDP members Alex Adamenenko and Jim Malloway, Liberal MP Francis Valeriot, and Conservative MPs David Anderson, Pierre Lemieux, and Larry Miller. Deconstructing Dinner also followed up with Liberal MP Francis Valeriot, who supports the bill being sent to committee, but nevertheless had many critical remarks to make that are requiring some deconstructing. Genetically engineered food has been an ongoing focus of discussion and debate here on Deconstructing Dinner. It's a subject that touches so many important issues involving food security, food sovereignty, corporate concentration in the food system, biodiversity, human health, food politics, and the list goes on. One of the key concerns that the introduction of GE crops has raised since they were first cultivated in 1995 has been the now clear inability to prevent the crops from crossing with non-genetically engineered conventional and organically grown varieties. With such strong opposition to the technologies around the world, concerns over contamination keep many countries and farmers on high alert. Just last week, Bulgaria joined the rank of countries who ban the cultivation of GE crops. The week earlier, Switzerland extended their ban for another 3 years. And each year, the bans appear to make more and more sense because many countries are learning the hard way that once the cat's out of the bag, it's inevitable that non-GE crops will become contaminated with DNA from genetically engineered varieties. In Mexico, as an example, where corn is the cultural staple, researchers there discovered in 2001 that wild varieties had been contaminated with GE varieties, surprising in light of the country maintaining a ban on GE corn. In India, as another example, organic cotton cultivated there, which represents 65% of the world's organic supply, has been found to be widely contaminated with GE cotton, also grown in India. In 2006, pharmaceutical and agricultural giant Bayer was responsible for contaminating American long grain rice supplies with an unapproved GE variety. That event has since led to a long string of lawsuits, the latest case closing out on March 12th, when according to the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, Bayer was ordered to pay more than $1 million in damages to Lenny Joe Kyle, an Arkansas farmer whose fields were contaminated by Bayer's unapproved GE rice. That represents the third verdict against Bayer following this incident. Just last month, the court awarded $1.5 million to farmers in Arkansas and Mississippi, and in December 2009, $2 million to farmers in Missouri. Three additional cases are scheduled for this year for farmers in Louisiana and Texas and a rice exporter, and another 7,000 cases are in litigation. And then there is Canada, where as we touched on a previous episode of the show, flax farmers here have been shut out of their number one market, the European Union. Back in the mid-90s, Canada, followed by the United States, approved the release of a genetically engineered flax called Trifid, created by the University of Saskatchewan. From that point forward, 40 farmers had been commissioned to begin growing out the variety to increase the supply of seed. But the Flax Council of Canada cried foul, recognizing that their number one market for flax did not permit any imports of genetically engineered foods. The Flax Council stepped in and successfully lobbied the Canadian government to deregister the variety, thereby making it illegal to grow. But those efforts appear to have been too late, because by 2001, 200,000 bushels of flax had already been grown, and despite much of it being destroyed, 8 years later in 2009, tests in Europe discovered genetically engineered flax in Canadian shipments. The $325 million Canadian flax industry was shut out of its number one market, where 70% of Canadian flax exports end up. And so here in 2010, enter Member of Parliament Alex Adamenenko, who represents the riding of BC's Southern Interior, also the home of Deconstructing Dinner. Adamenenko is the NDP's critic on agriculture and agri-food and food security. Alex has tabled many private members' bills that address GE foods, such as bills calling for mandatory labeling of GE foods or calling for a ban on Terminator seed technology, a technology which renders seeds sterile come harvest. But not all bills introduced reach debate in Canada's House of Commons. But his, Bill C-474, did, and was created in direct response to this 2009 flax contamination. The bill is calling for a revision to Canada's Seed Regulations Act, a revision that would require that an analysis of potential harm to export markets be conducted before the sale of any new genetically engineered seed is permitted. Now, this seems like a pretty common sense approach. However, at this point, no such analysis is in place. Instead, new GE varieties only go through an environmental and health assessment before being approved. Now, the process of introducing a private member's bill like this one involves 2 hours of debate in the House of Commons, at which point members can then vote on whether or not to send the bill to the Standing Committee on Agriculture and Agri-Food for further discussion. And so over the remainder of the next hour, we'll listen in on the first hour of that debate and deconstruct some of what was shared. You might recall an episode we aired not long ago that carried out a similar task when Bill C-517 was debated in mid-2008. That bill was calling for the mandatory labeling of foods containing genetically engineered ingredients. That debate was filled with inaccurate, misleading, and highly questionable remarks that we ended up deconstructing here on the show. And this latest debate on C-474 from March 17th, 2010 was indeed no different. But before we deconstruct those remarks, first, here's the NDP's Alex Adamenenko introducing his bill in Canada's House of Commons on March 17th.
What my bill proposes is to amend the Seeds Regulations Act to require that an analysis of potential harm to export markets be conducted before the sale of any new genetically engineered seed is permitted. It is well known that our farmers are having a difficult time, as it is without throwing more obstacles at them. The scenario goes something like this. If GE alfalfa or wheat is introduced into the environment, at some point in time, sooner or later, it will contaminate non-GM varieties. Once this happens, our international customers who are buying non-GM alfalfa and wheat will refuse to do so. This will hurt farmers. That is why we need to have a mechanism in place to assess potential harm to our export markets before this happens.
Absolutely.
Comme vous savez,
as you probably know, Mr. Speaker, our farmers were hard hit when they learned that an illegal GE flax seed had contaminated Canadian transport and exports of flax. Europeans started to pull certain products and from their shelves, and shipments of Canadian flax intended for Europe was quarantined. At the end of 2009, 35 countries indicated that they had received contaminated flax from Canada, and thus that led to the closure of our export markets. Now, in addition to the drop in the price and the uncertainty of the markets, producers have to assume the costs of tests and the cleanup.
Western producer on the 4th of March of this year, a testing protocol for flax established by Canada and the European Union is proving too onerous for Canadian exporters and shipping companies. Flax destined for Europe must now be tested for GE evidence at three stages: delivery to country elevators, loading onto rail cars, at the transfer of the contents onto ocean-bound vessels. Due to logistical pressures, tight shipping schedules, and test result delays, this protocol is unworkable. Already, the federal government has committed up to $1.9 million to help the flax industry with testing and to build back good trading relations with Europe. This is a small indication of the costs of unexpected GE contamination that can affect trade. This $1.9 million did not compensate farmers for the added testing costs or loss of market.
Alex Adamenenko. Now, while Bill C-474 is in response to the flax incident as described, it's also being introduced to prevent any similar scenarios from unfolding, and in particular to address the impacts of any future introduction of genetically engineered varieties of alfalfa and wheat. GE varieties of alfalfa have already been developed in cooperation with seed giant Monsanto. When those varieties were approved in the United States in 2005, farmers did begin planting them. But in 2007, following a successful legal challenge of their approval, the varieties were deregistered. As this show goes to air, the reapproval of the variety is approaching its final stages, and Alex spoke to that case on March 17th in Canada's House of Commons.
In their submissions to the United States Department of Agriculture, USDA, Animal Plant Health Inspection Service, the Saskatchewan Organic Directorate, as well as the National Farmers Union of Canada, expressed their strong opposition to the APHIS decision to grant non-regulated status to two GE alfalfa lines produced by Monsanto and Forage Genetics International. This decision has no built-in protection for farmers to guard against contamination. Let us also remember that contamination does not respect international borders. Basically, if APHIS deregulates the production of GE alfalfa in the U.S., the likelihood of contamination is a virtual certainty. So, what are the consequences? The ability of farmers to produce organic or conventionally grown alfalfa will steadily deteriorate. Markets for organic alfalfa will be lost, as will those for any organic production where alfalfa is used either as a natural fertilizer or feedstock. It is one of the most widely planted crops by area in Canada, since it is used for a variety of functions in farm systems. Alfalfa is the most important forage crop in Canada, used in the beef and dairy industry. The Canadian alfalfa processing industry, also known as the dehydration industry, ranks in the world's top five largest exporters of alfalfa pellets and alfalfa cubes. Alfalfa is deeply integrated into the entire organic food and farming system in Canada. The Manitoba Forage Council has already passed a resolution saying that they will hold Ottawa directly responsible for any economic loss experienced as a result of trade injury incurred due to the loss of export markets of alfalfa seed and other legume and grass seed crops related to the introduction of Roundup Ready alfalfa in Canada. To date, Canada has four GE crops, corn, soya, canola, and white sugar beet. Bill C-474 should not affect them, since any further introduction of GE varieties would probably not close down their markets. Mr. Speaker, we need to have a very close, objective look at what the market reality is for Canadian farmers. Flax farmers have long understood the market reality very clearly. They knew that contamination of Canadian flax with a GE flax would close their European market, which represents 60 to 70% of our flax exports. In 2001, the GE flax that has now been found in Canadian flax exports was deregistered because of their efforts. The GE flax seed was made illegal to sell in Canada to prevent this exact scenario of market chaos. We must now follow the example of flax farmers who have had the foresight to know the economic risks that GE flax posed to their export markets. The flax farmers took concrete steps within their power to prevent this, but we let them down.
NDP Member of Parliament Alex Adamenenko here on Deconstructing Dinner. Alex represents the riding of BC Southern Interior and on March 17th introduced his private member's bill C-474 for debate in Canada's House of Commons. So what do other members of Parliament think about this proposed bill, and in particular, Canada's minority Conservative government? Speaking on behalf of the government was David Anderson, Anderson is the parliamentary secretary to Canada's Minister of Natural Resources. He's the MP for the riding of Cypress Hills Grassland in Saskatchewan. Anderson called the bill anti-farmer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm very disturbed to be here today and to see this attempt to mislead farmers and Canadians. This is not about farmers. This is about the NDP's opposition to GMOs, and I think everybody needs to understand that right off the bat. And I think a perfect example of it is the fact that the member opposite is using the Triffitt example with flax, which would not be impacted at all by this bill. And I think he's doing that in order to try to scare the farm community. I think he should own up to that and admit that that's what's going on here, because that example does not apply to his legislation. I read the seed regulations, Mr. Speaker. They are focused on seed characteristics. They are focused on science. To bring this bill into play will bring all of our seed regulations in a completely different direction. It will no longer be based on science. Farmers need to be very wary of that. Secondly, Mr. Speaker, this bill is so vague, and I think it's done deliberately because legal challenges to this will be totally undefined. And in the past, we've seen a real desire by some groups to be able to take these kinds of things to court. This bill leaves that so wide open, anybody's going to be able to go to court on any issue, and I think the member needs to explain a little bit more about the consequences from that. Thirdly, it's onerous. It's going to require an entire new bureaucracy to be built. Fourthly, it's anti-farmer. I'd like the member to explain to me what would have happened in the canola industry and the soybean industry if this had been in place, Mr. Speaker. Those opportunities, those billions of dollars of income in Western Canada would have been taken away from Western Canadian farmers.
Conservative Member of Parliament and Parliamentary Secretary to the Minister of Natural Resources, David Anderson. Now, Anderson suggested that had such a bill been in place, Canada's canola industry would have suffered with, quote, billions of dollars taken away. In his short statement, Anderson provided no rationale explaining why such a scenario would have unfolded. Also making the suggestion quite questionable is that genetically engineered canola provides no consumer benefits that differentiate it from non-GE varieties. In other words, there really is no compelling evidence nor reason to suggest that global markets for canola view GE canola as being any more attractive than non-GE. So the argument that the canola industry would have suffered appears to be quite flawed. David Anderson also conveniently ignored how, since the introduction of GE canola into Canada, the organic canola sector has all but disappeared. Because organic products do not permit the presence of GE ingredients, Canadian farmers don't see much point growing organic canola when contamination from GE varieties is almost inevitable. With the organic sector being the fastest growing sector in the food system, contrary to Anderson's comment, the introduction of GE canola has likely taken away and prevented millions, if not billions, of dollars being generated from a once possible organic canola sector. Deconstructing Dinner was also forwarded a letter that was authored by David Anderson that further expands on his belief that Bill C-474, had it been in place in the mid-90s, would have destroyed Canada's canola industry. The letter was written in response to an email Anderson received from a Saskatchewan resident located in his riding, asking him to support Adam Inanco's bill. In Anderson's response, he stated that, quote, had the bill been in place previously, there would be no canola industry in Canada. The $12.2 billion that is generated annually in Western Canada would be lost, end quote. Now, there's no need to mince words here on Deconstructing Dinner and saying how preposterous of an idea this is to suggest that had GE canola been prevented from being introduced, the entire industry, which was already alive and well long before 95, would have disappeared. Yet despite the odd statement by David Anderson, he also wrote that the, quote, NDP is out of touch with policy, being set by radical special interest groups, end quote. This too is a strong statement to make, because what Anderson and Canada's Conservative government are suggesting is that groups like the Canadian Federation of Agriculture, the CFA, are somehow a radical special interest group. The CFA has in fact endorsed this bill, suggesting that it should indeed go to committee for further discussion. And with the organization representing 200,000 farmers, keeping in mind that there are 225,000 farms in Canada, calling groups like the CFA a, quote, radical special interest group seems to be grasping. Another farmer organization who supports the bill going to committee is Canada's National Farmers Union. Now, often what might prevent any bill like C-474 from being adopted is the possible absence of a similar regulation elsewhere in the world. But in this case, there is a country who assesses the potential harm to export markets of GE crops before they're approved: Argentina. And here again, the NDP's Alex Adamenenko.
The government of Argentina understands this and has already set the precedent. Argentina has historically been unwilling to authorize GM crops prior to European approval. The likely impact of the GM crop on exports is actually a consideration in their approval process. In addition to the environmental and food safety assessment, the government of Argentina includes an assessment of the absence of negative impacts on their exports. They describe, and I quote, "A key part of the GMO regulatory process consists of verifying that the commercial approval will not have a negative impact on our foreign trade."
While an analysis of the potential economic harm caused by introducing new GE crops is part of the regulatory process in Argentina, in countries like the United States, where it is not, there is nevertheless a few recent legal cases where the economic harm caused by introducing GMOs has come up as part of some important decisions. In the case of alfalfa, as introduced earlier, the United States Department of Agriculture, the USDA, permitted the introduction of Monsanto's genetically engineered alfalfa in 2005. But in 2006, the Center for Food Safety, a U.S.-based non-governmental organization, challenged the approval and filed a lawsuit on behalf of farmers and not-for-profits. The Center for Food Safety won the case, after arguing, among other things, that the approval of the alfalfa ignored any economic risk assessment. In their defense, the USDA argued that they were not required to assess economic risk, which is true. Yet as part of that 2007 ruling by the U.S. District Court Judge Charles Breyer of the Northern District of California, the court stated that, quote, "economic effects are relevant when they are interrelated with natural or physical environmental effects. Here, the economic effects on the organic and conventional farmers of the government's deregulation decision are interrelated with and indeed a direct result of the effect on the physical environment," end quote. And yet another and similar ruling was also delivered last year, 2009, when the Center for Food Safety, Haimoing Organic Seeds, the Organic Seed Alliance, and the Sierra Club challenged the USDA's approval of genetically engineered sugar beet, arguing that the USDA's environmental and economic assessments were inadequate. Again, those groups were victorious, and in the ruling, those same statements that the economic effects are indeed relevant. This is Deconstructing Dinner, a syndicated weekly radio show and podcast produced in Nelson, British Columbia at Kootenai Co-op Radio, CJLY. I'm John Steinman. Today's episode is archived on our website at deconstructingdinner.ca. Today, we're deconstructing the March 17th debate in Canada's House of Commons when NDP Member of Parliament Alex Adamenenko introduced Bill C-474, calling for a change to the country's Seeds Regulations Act that would require an analysis of potential harm to export markets from the introduction of genetically engineered seeds prior to their approval. The bill comes on the heels of last year's incident when the European Union closed its borders to shipments of Canadian flax after discovering the presence of genetically engineered flax in those shipments. In the mid-90s, the University of Saskatchewan developed a GE flax variety, which was later cultivated until the Flax Council of Canada successfully lobbied the government to deregister it in 2001. Bill C-474 is intended to prevent any future scenarios like this from occurring again, and on March 17th, the bill was debated for 1 hour, leaving another hour up for debate on April 1st. Following that one-hour debate, in April, if members do vote in favor of the bill, it will get sent to committee, where members of Parliament would further discuss the bill and then provide a recommendation on how to proceed. But as heard earlier, Canada's Conservative government opposes the bill from even going to committee. And in addition to MP David Anderson, who we heard earlier, also speaking in opposition to the bill was Canada's Parliamentary Secretary to the Minister of Agriculture, Pierre Lemieux. Lemieux represents the Ontario riding of Glengarry Prescott Russell, and he launched his comments with a similar argument that we've heard here on the show before. You might recall back in 2009, we aired part two of our Primer on Pesticide Propaganda series, in which we examined the ongoing efforts by the pesticide industry to continually refer to science as being the most important part of regulating chemicals. And despite the science on GMOs being very young and always changing, as scientific positions always do, Pierre Lemieux's March 17th statements echoed those science-centric arguments put forward by industry, that regulation should only be based on science.
This bill, Bill C-474, raises a complex and important issue that affects farmers and the agricultural sector. And let me start by saying that the Government of Canada considers issues of safety to be the highest priority for all agricultural production. Canada's regulatory system requires that new agricultural products undergo science-based safety assessments before they can be cultivated by a grower, used in livestock feed, or made available to consumers. Mr. Speaker, safety comes first with all foods, including those derived through biotechnology. Canada's science-based approval process would not permit any genetically engineered seed to pose a threat to health or the environment to be grown in Canada. Mr. Speaker, Canada has one of the most stringent and rigorous regulatory systems in the world. Mr. Speaker, the subject matter of this bill certainly raises questions concerning how best to manage the market impacts of genetically engineered products. However, our government, along with the vast majority of farmers and industry leaders, support a safety approval process based solely on sound science. For example, in an article in the Western Producer, dated January 21, 2010, Rick White, General Manager of the Canadian Canola Growers Association, said he feared that this bill would make Canada's regulatory approval system for genetically modified crops look more like Europe's. He said, quote, "We strongly encourage Canada to stick to our guns on science-based regulatory processes. Keep the politics out of it," unquote. Mr. White added that growers could lose the agronomic and economic benefits GM crops have delivered to the canola industry if Canada moves from a science-based system to one based on an assessment of potential economic harm. Crop developers would be wary of spending money and time on developing new crops. Mr. Speaker, contrary to what is stated in the bill, Parliament cannot instruct the Governor and Council to make a regulation. Furthermore, a regulation to include the analysis of potential market harm cannot be made unless Section 4.1 of the Seeds Act is revised to authorize the establishment of such a regulation. Sound science is the foundation of Canada's position regarding trade disputes. Sound science must be the starting point of any discussion. Science-based arguments have been very effective for Canada in past cases that we have brought before the World Trade Organization, including cases won against the European Union.
Conservative Member of Parliament Pierre Lemieux speaking in opposition to Bill C-474, a bill that, if enacted, would require that all genetically engineered seeds wishing to be introduced into Canada undergo an analysis of potential harm to export markets, a step that today is not required. Lemieux, who opposes the bill, introduced another argument that was also echoed throughout the one-hour debate. He suggested that introducing an analysis of potential harm to export markets into Canada's regulations would discourage companies from investing into the development of new genetically engineered crops. Lemieux's Conservative colleague David Anderson also used this argument in the email correspondence that we referred to earlier between him and one of his constituents. Despite Anderson's constituent requesting that he support the bill, Anderson refused. And similar to Lemieux, but stated in a rather Orwellian tone, Anderson wrote this: "The bill will clearly restrict technology and science. New technology holds the key to future prosperity," end quote. Anderson further insisted that the proposed bill would, quote, "impose an impossible burden," requesting an unscientific analysis that must be based on future prophecies and projections rather than on issues of food safety and health, end quote. Now, we don't need to go too far to deconstruct this rather contradictory statement, because while Anderson does not believe assessments of GMOs should be based on, quote, projections, the very scientific analysis that he's promoting is already, at least we can only hope, heavily based on projections. In fact, that's the job of the Canadian Food Inspection Agency when approving a new food, to project the potential harm to the consumer and the environment. But the contradictory nature of that statement doesn't end there, because in the very next sentence following Anderson's denouncing regulations that assess projections, he wrote this: "The bill also ignores producers, failing to ask for an analysis of the possible benefits of new varieties to our producers," end quote. Well, aren't those possible benefits not also a projection? And if Anderson is suggesting that possible benefits should also be assessed, then should possible harm not also be assessed? In our efforts to contact conservative members who spoke against the bill, we did speak with Pierre Lemieux's office in Ottawa with the hope of following up on some of his statements. His staff indicated that they would call back to set up a time for Lemieux to speak with Deconstructing Dinner, but no one called back. As Conservative Member of Parliament Pierre Lemieux continued with his March 17th remarks in the House of Commons, he shifted his opposition to Bill C-474 to the issue of contamination itself, the movement of genetically engineered seed and DNA into fields of non-GE crops. This, of course, is at the heart of what this proposed bill is addressing. Yet despite the widespread issues of contamination around the world that have shut entire industries out of global markets, Lemieux argued that industry, not government, should be left to manage the outcomes of commingling.
In the past, industry has taken the lead on assessing market risks and opportunities of GM products. Decisions have been made on a crop-by-crop basis, with producers and processors charting the best path forward depending on market conditions. Let me give you a few examples of this, Mr. Speaker. The Canadian canola industry dealt with the potential market impacts caused by exporting GM canola to key export markets by choosing to segregate GM canola. The segregation process was developed by the industry and involved all members of the value chain, product developers, seed suppliers, grain handlers, processors, and end users. The Canola Council of Canada and grower organizations had a strong relationship with customers in Japan and the European Union, which increased their confidence in the segregation system. When Japan approved the GM varieties in 1997, the segregation system was discontinued.
Again, the example used there is also in need of some deconstructing. Because while Lemieux extols the segregation system developed by industry in the mid-90s, genetically engineered canola had only just been introduced. And as he stated, that system was discontinued in 1997, leaving only 2 years to test out the system. And so was the system, as Lemieux suggests, really discontinued because Japan began allowing imports of GE canola? Well, not exactly. And despite Lemieux commending the Canola Council of Canada for introducing this short-lived segregation system that supposedly, according to Lemieux, worked, it was actually the Canola Council of Canada's very own manager at the time, Dale Adolph, who in 1999 was quoted as saying, "The canola industry has found segregation doesn't work," end quote. And since then, commingling between genetically engineered canola and non-GE canola have become widespread across Canada. René Van Acker is a professor at the University of Guelph's Department of Plant Agriculture, and as he states, quote, "Canola is possibly the worst candidate crop species for practical segregation of GE and non-GE, because it is inherently promiscuous," end quote. He went on to say that 90% of certified Canadian canola seed samples contain unintended transgenes. And let's further deconstruct Pierre Lemieux's remarks. Here again is a clip from that last segment that we just heard.
The Canola Council of Canada and grower organizations had a strong relationship with customers in Japan and the European Union, which increased their confidence in the segregation system.
Lemieux pointed to Canada's canola industry as having been able to satisfy their European customers with this segregation system. Well, nothing could be farther from the truth, and European countries have never received any notable exports of canola from Canada since GE canola was first introduced. In fact, since 2005, no exports of canola seed have been sent to Europe, and since 2007, no canola oil. Only a small amount of canola meal appears to be shipped from Canada to Ireland. Again, Deconstructing Dinner contacted Pierre Lemieux to ask him where he acquired his information. But after we spoke with one of his staff members and were told that they would contact us to set up a time, no one called back. This is Deconstructing Dinner. Now, up until now, we've heard from members of Parliament from both the NDP and the Conservative Party, but in order for Bill C-474 to receive enough support for it to go to committee, both Liberal and Bloc Québécois members also need to be in support of the bill. The bill is calling for changes to Canada's seed regulations that would require that all genetically engineered seeds seeking approval for release be analyzed for their possible harm to Canada's export markets, many of whom do not accept genetically engineered foods. One of the Liberal members who spoke to the bill was Francis Valeriot, the Member of Parliament for the Ontario riding of Guelph, which happens to also be the major research hub in Canada for genetically engineered technologies. While Valeriot commended the intention of the bill, his remarks were very critical of it. But his introductory statements raised a few eyebrows after he suggested that the proposed bill would not have prevented the 2009 flax contamination incident from occurring.
The intent of this bill is to amend the Seeds Regulations Act in order to, quote, require that an analysis of potential harm to export markets be conducted before the sale of any new genetically engineered seed is permitted. Mr. Speaker, the wording of this bill is very simple. In reality, however, its content and potential ramifications are tremendously complex. If enacted as it is currently worded, this bill risks wide-ranging, unintended, and undesirable consequences. The member who tabled this bill stated it is required in order to prevent potential damage to Canadian export markets by genetically modified organisms. He stated in this House and elsewhere that he developed this bill largely as a reaction to an incident that occurred last year concerning Canada's flax exports to the European Union, and to prevent similar incidents from occurring in the future. Specifically, the member referred to a case in Europe that arose in July 2009, when it was discovered that Canadian flax exports were unintentionally commingled with the GM flax known as Triffid. The presence of Triffid flax was found first in Germany in cereal and bakery products, and its subsequent tracing to Canadian shipments resulted in severe consequences for our flax producers. The EU, the market accounting for approximately 70% of Canada's flax exports, has a zero-tolerance policy toward non-approved GM products and closed its borders to Canadian flax in September and October 2009. The first question arises directly from the incident this bill is attempting to address, and that is, if this bill had been the law at the time, and a study of the potential harm to export markets by Triffid flaxseed had been conducted, as is suggested by this bill, for future GM seeds in Canada, would the knowledge gained from that study have prohibited Triffid's exportation to the European Union and hence prevented the resulting market disruptions for flax producers in Canada? Mr. Speaker, the Triffid flax that was found recently in Canadian flax shipments to the European Union was never approved for sale in Canada, though developed a decade before the incident. And as such, any export market harm study as recommended in this bill, regardless of outcome, would not have prevented the commingling of Triffid GM flax with non-GM flax seed. This is a critical flaw in this bill that must be considered by this House, that it would not have prevented the very incident it wishes to address.
Liberal Member of Parliament Francis Valeriot. Valeriot believes that Alex Adamenko's bill C-474 is flawed because, as he suggests, had such a bill been in place prior to the contamination of Canada's flax supply, the incident would not have been prevented by this bill. Valeriot's reason is that the flax was, quote, never approved for sale in Canada, end quote. But by all accounts, from what we've come across here at Deconstructing Dinner, that GE seed was very much approved for sale. It was first approved by the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, the CFIA, for environmental release. 40 farmers grew 200,000 bushels of that variety with the intent of increasing the seed supply. And the University of Saskatchewan, the developer of the seed, granted exclusive distribution rights to Saskatchewan seed company Quality Assured Seeds. The only reason the GE flax was never grown for commercial sale is because the Flax Council of Canada successfully lobbied the CFIA to deregister it. And so Valeriot's comments in the House of Commons appear to be inaccurate. And so Deconstructing Dinner followed up with him to inquire into that comment. He spoke to us from his office in Ottawa, and here's a clip from that exchange.
Well, if you look at the case, and you probably have, you'll discover that Triffid, in fact, was never permitted for sale. In fact, it had been developed some 10 years earlier and was pulled by their developers and not allowed, it wasn't allowed for sale. So had this law been in effect at the time, it wouldn't have resulted in the Triffid not commingling with the non-GMO product. So it wouldn't have addressed, it would not have addressed the problem. The TRIFID still would have gotten into the system.
I wanted to bring that up. I know when you first posed that question, you know, using this flax impetus for the bill as an example, you know, would this bill have affected the introduction of this flax? You know, I thought that was a really good question, certainly probably the question to have asked. As far as our understanding of the case, what we've come across is that, yes, it indeed had been approved by the CFAA. I know we have here a document from 1996, a decision document stating that, quote, the unconfined release into the environment and livestock feed use of CDC TRIFID is therefore authorized. We're also aware that from that point on, by 2001, before it was deregistered, that 200,000 bushels of TRIFID flax had been cultivated by 40 farmers.
Right.
And it had been authorized by the University of Saskatchewan,
right,
who had authorized quality assured seeds to sell it. They'd been given the license to sell this product.
Right.
So from our viewpoint, it appears that it had been approved. Can you maybe clarify what you were referring to, what information you were relying on there?
Well, I'm referring to that information, that it was pulled, as you acknowledge, and no longer permitted for sale. But it had entered the system. And I guess the question is sale really the right point in time that the analysis should be undertaken? Because the issue here is, when might it enter the system? When might it commingle? And is it only at the point of sale? Because I understand, too, that some of these products get out sometimes into the system, even before, not necessarily for sale purposes and by distributors, but can get into the system.
Francis Valeriot. Now, this might start to sound a bit confusing. I know it started to get a bit confusing on our end. And what Valeriot appears to be referring to is an issue of semantics. The intention of the bill is to change the process of approving GE seeds for release in Canada. That's not in question. But because the bill suggests an analysis be conducted prior to the, quote, sale of any new GE seeds is permitted, Valeriot believes the bill as worded wouldn't result in an analysis of potential harm at the point of registration, which nevertheless is the, again, intention of the bill. Here again is Liberal Member of Parliament Francis Valeriot sharing another concern that he has with the bill on March 17th in the House of Commons. His concern echoes what we heard earlier by Conservative Member Pierre Lemieux.
It must be noted that the bill, as it is currently worded, may actually present serious barriers to this burgeoning Canadian industry and potentially risks our competitive advantage in this cutting-edge field of research and development.
A similar comment was also made by Valeriot's Liberal colleague, MP Scott Sims. But the concern that the bill would stifle research and development in the sector ignores the many other types of research and development in Canada's food system, most notably among farmers and non-GE seed developers. The introduction of GE canola has itself stifled research and development in the organic sector by effectively eliminating the existence of organic canola in Canada. Because of the inevitable risk of organic canola becoming contaminated with GE canola, farmers don't see much point growing an organic variety using organic principles. And as a result, out goes any point of researching and developing canola varieties that are suited for organic production. So this research and development argument that kept coming up throughout the March 17th debate is far from complete, without a more holistic view of what research and development means across all sectors. I brought this argument up as part of my follow-up conversation with Francis Valeriot, asking if he believed that this other side of the equation is an important part of the dialogue. And he mostly agreed, and doesn't believe that any technology should be permitted within the food system if it harms the presence of other sectors.
Well, it's a concern. I don't know that it's an argument necessarily, as it is a concern. Do we concern ourselves that genetically modified crops will overtake and frankly expel the others from being grown at all? And I think that, you know, for those that want to be able to grow organically or conventionally, they ought to be able to. The extent to which you put restrictions on genetically modified crops is something that would need to be looked at if it's deemed that in a particular set of circumstances it may overtake and completely expel the others, from the food chain.
This argument suggesting that Bill C-474 will stifle research and development is also in need of some more scrutiny, because recent history has demonstrated that regulations and market conditions have not seemed to do much to prevent companies from investing in GE research. One case in point was Monsanto's development of Roundup Ready GE wheat. Even though there appeared to be no market for the product and strong opposition to it, the company nevertheless researched it, invested in it, developed it, got it approved for release, and in 2004, following strong opposition to its possible introduction, the company dropped its efforts to get the product to market. And another case in point, Bayer Crop Science, another major player in the industry who, as mentioned at the top of the hour, had been developing varieties of genetically engineered rice, even though no market for such a product had been established. In fact, by all accounts, it appears to be the actual strategy of the entire biotechnology sector. Develop the product first, and then push it through the regulatory system later. Member of Parliament Alex Adamaneko of the NDP introduced this Bill C-474, and let's come back to a comment that he made during the bill's first hour of debate that also responded to these concerns, suggested by critics of the bill that if enacted, the bill would stifle research and development.
Well, I would like to thank the honourable member for his question, and that's a very real question. So we have to decide who do we want to help, the biotech industry or farmers? I think we can, we've shown that we have canola that has worked, that we have, now, if we introduce tomorrow GE alfalfa into the environment, and if non-GE alfalfa is contaminated, that's the question I want this House to think of. What will happen to our export wheat markets if contamination is found in that good quality wheat that we export to other countries? That's the assessment. That's all it is. That's the assessment that we have to do. And if we don't do it, then we're not doing any service to our farmers whatsoever.
The NDP's Alex Adamaneko. This is Deconstructing Dinner. If you've missed any of today's episode, it is archived online at deconstructingdinner.ca and posted under the March 25th, 2010 episode. The page also includes a wealth of additional information on today's topic, including additional audio not heard here. Today's full one-hour episode has been deconstructing the first hour of debate on Bill C-474 that took place on March 17th in Canada's House of Commons. The bill, which was introduced by the NDP's Alex Adamaneko, is in response to last year's incident involving Canadian flax. The $320 million industry was hit hard when a now unapproved variety of genetically engineered flax was discovered in shipments to the European Union, by far the largest market for Canadian flax. European countries do not permit the import of GE foods, and despite the variety in question having been deregistered in 2001, over the very fears that this incident would occur, the flax was cultivated in the years prior, thereby having already entered into the system to now appear 8 years later. Bill C-474 is intended to prevent this scenario from ever happening again, and in particular to prevent it happening to alfalfa and wheat farmers. While GE flax and alfalfa are not cultivated in Canada, there are efforts to introduce GE varieties of both in the near and distant future. The bill is therefore calling for changes to Canada's regulatory regime that currently approves new GE crops based on an environmental and health assessment. The change would introduce, in addition to those two assessments, an analysis of potential harm to export markets. One of the arguments that came up earlier on the show from Conservative members who spoke in opposition to this proposed bill was the fear of Canada's regulatory system departing from one based on science and becoming one based on politics. Liberal MP Francis Valeriot also expressed a similar concern, suggesting that approvals of new seeds needs to be based on, quote, sound science, and not on subjective, fluid economic factors.
The next question that arises when considering this bill is, what are the potential consequences for Canada's existing regulatory framework and agricultural industry? Whether intended or unintended, should it become law? It must be noted that the bill, as it is currently worded, actually holds the potential for a drastic departure from our current regulatory regime. The Canadian regulatory system that protects our health, safety, and environment is one of the best, most comprehensive, and respected in the world. It is important to point out that these regulations are based on sound science, not the more subjective and fluid economic factors that this bill proposes.
Now, this statement, too, as we did earlier on the show, is in need of some careful scrutiny. because while economic factors can indeed be fluid, so too is science. Also catching our attention here on Deconstructing Dinner was Valeriot's opposition to the bill because of the, quote, subjective economic factors it's intended to address. But how subjective were some of those economic factors around the time in the mid-90s when this GE flax in question was first approved? Both then and now, European countries prohibited the import of GE foods, and really that seems to be quite an objective circumstance. We raise this concern in our conversation with Francis Valeriot.
Well, that's a good question. It takes me to, you know, the definition of export markets, which is really not clearly defined, and the definition of potential harm. What happens if there is a certain market that does not accept and has a zero tolerance for GMOs, but there is another large or emerging market that does? Do you shut down an entire industry because a certain part of the market has a zero tolerance? And who is going to decide the yes or no? Who's going to decide the percentages? Who's going to decide what is really harmful and what is not really harmful? And how do you explain that to the farmer who's losing or the developer of a seed who's losing access to a market? I mean, it's just, to me, it becomes very problematic.
Certainly an issue in need of addressing, and one that, if the bill passes, would then receive time in committee to discuss. And with the NDP members clearly supporting that the bill be sent to committee and Conservative members clearly opposing it, Liberal and Bloc Québécois members would need to both vote in favor of the bill, going to committee for it to stay alive. The Bloc's André Bellavance spoke in debate and in favor of the bill, and surprisingly, despite the many reservations held by Francis Valeriot towards the proposed bill, he did suggest that Liberal members will vote to send it to committee. As you'll hear in this clip, Conservative members were less than pleased when Valeriot concluded his remarks.
Our reading of this bill, as it is currently worded, is that though well-intended, it has the potential to create far more difficulties than the problems it attempts to resolve. We will support sending the bill to committee so that there is the opportunity to more fully scrutinize the issues and make a well-informed decision on whether or not this bill should go any further and report back to the House with recommendations. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Liberal MP for the riding of Guelph, Francis Valeriot. Valeriot sits on Canada's Standing Committee on Agriculture and Agri-Food, and you can hear his thoughts on how he believes this bill will be discussed in committee if it receives enough support in the House. Those remarks are archived on our website at deconstructingdinner.ca, where other additional audio for today's topic is also located. And as we near the end of today's episode, let's quickly jump back to the aggressive opposition that Conservative members expressed towards Bill C-474, as heard by their jeering in the background there. Spoken of earlier on the show was support for the intention of this bill by the Canadian Federation of Agriculture, the CFA. They represent 200,000 Canadian farmers. And with Canada's largest farmer organization supporting the bill, it left the NDP's Jim Mallaway with some strong suggestions to share towards the end of the one-hour debate. Mallaway represents the Manitoba riding of Elmwood, Transcona.
So the question is, if you have all of these organizations in support of this bill, then who's against it? As usual, you don't have to look too far to find out that you have the agribusiness people and the big money people, the corporate farm people, pulling the strings behind the scenes. And you know, the members know that the Conservatives, you know, they know what is really going on behind the scenes here. But you know, they just basically are tied. It's, I guess, easier for them to think in terms of having the. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In terms of just take their marching orders from agribusiness, and you know, everything's going to be okay. Well, you know, the world has developed that way, but there's a strong resistance against that approach. And we're seeing that in the markets. We're seeing that in Europe. We're seeing people in European markets resisting, and I predict it's going to happen in other markets as well.
The NDP's Jim Mallaway. Also speaking to some of the more underlying concerns that seek to explain just why there would be MPs not supporting economic harm analysis of the introduction of new seeds was the NDP's Alex Adamenenko.
In Toronto Star, January the 9th, 2001, Don Westfall, biotech industry consultant and vice president of Promar International, was quoted as saying, and I quote, The hope of the industry is that over time, the market is so flooded with GMOs that there's nothing you can do about it. You just sort of surrender, unquote. But what if the European Union does not surrender anytime soon? And our wheat farmers, are wheat farmers to surrender their export markets instead? Or our alfalfa processors? Mr. Speaker, after all this time, there is no sign of surrender. No amount of wishful thinking on the part of the industry will change that fact. The market may be flooded, but resistance in our export markets is relentless and growing.
And as we approach the close of today's deconstructing of Bill C-474 here on Deconstructing Dinner, the last member to speak in debate on March 17th was Conservative member Larry Miller. Miller is the chair of the Standing Committee on Agriculture and Agri-Food and represents the Ontario riding of Bruce Gray Owen Sound. Miller's comments reflect the common, hands-off approach to regulation among Canada's Conservative government. Because of the one-hour time limit of the debate, Miller only had a few minutes to comment. But his last remark was yet another example, as has been documented here on the show on so many occasions, of how out of touch Conservative members are with what genetically engineered foods are.
So we need to be very cautious of any move to introduce a subjective, non-scientific element to the discussion. I'm referring to socio-economic considerations like consumers' attitudes in other countries to genetically engineered foods. These matters are very important, but they are best resolved by the industry and the marketplace, not governments. Is that the end of my time? But we have to base this on science GMO or genetically modified seeds and what have you have been around for 50 years, and they're very important to agriculture.
While Conservative MP Larry Miller believes GMOs have been around for 50 years, in fact, they were only introduced in 1995. Miller will be speaking in the House of Commons again as part of the continuation of this debate on April 1st, and we'll wait and see if he corrects his statement. Also to note, we'll be keeping you up to date on this bill as it unfolds, and in the meantime, you can, as just mentioned a moment ago, check out our website for some bonus audio, including an exclusive 20-minute recording from the March 15th press conference when this bill was first introduced by Alex Adamenenko. Speaking at the press conference was Lucy Sherritt of the Canadian Biotechnology Action Network, Maureen Bostock of the National Farmers Union, and the NDP's deputy critic on food security and agriculture, Malcolm Allen. And in closing out today's broadcast and further capturing the hypocrisy of much of what we seem to find takes place in Ottawa on this subject of GE food is a clip we've extracted here from the House of Commons in October 2009. It was then that the NDP's Alex Adamenenko first introduced his concern with the contamination of Canada's flax with a now unapproved GE variety. Responding to the concern was Canada's Minister of Agriculture, Jerry Ritz. His response achieved two things. The first, a seeming admission that the approval of GE flax by the Canadian government in the mid-90s was, quote, taking a walk on the wild side, end quote. Which, despite Ritz's agreement that approving the flax was a mistake, his Conservative colleagues do not agree that any changes to Canada's approvals of GE seeds should change. And the second thing Ritz's response achieves is a complete digression away from the issue, with the introduction of another.
Mr. Speaker, 15,000 Canadian flax farmers are facing a crisis of potentially staggering proportions. The entire European market has been closed to their crop because it had been widely contaminated by genetically modified flax that has been illegal to sell as seed in Canada. We need a full investigation into this disaster. The source of this contamination must be found, and before approving field testing and environmental release of new GM crops such as alfalfa and wheat, we need regulations that consider their economic impact. Will the minister commit to supporting our farmers and protecting our food?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture and Agri-Food.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And, of course, this gives me the opportunity to say that Canada does not produce GM flax. The Liberals took a walk on the wild side a number of years ago, but that was deregistered almost immediately, Mr. Speaker. And Canadian flax is safe and a healthy product. Of course, we're having some scientific discussions with the European Union at this point, but I can assure the member opposite that the Canadian Grain Commission and the Canadian Food Inspection Agency have those discussions well in hand. We're getting to the bottom of this scientifically. We'll continue that work. But what farmers really want to know, Mr. Speaker, is what's that member and his rural NDP caucus going to do about the gun registry? Are you going to support that private member's bill or not?
Yeah!
And And that was this week's edition of Deconstructing Dinner, produced and recorded at Nelson, British Columbia's Kootenai Co-op Radio. I've been your host, John Steinman. Thanks to my technical assistant, John Ryan. The theme music for Deconstructing Dinner is courtesy of Nelson area resident Adam Shake. This radio show is provided free of charge to campus community radio stations across the country and relies on the financial support from you, the listener. Support for the program can be donated through our website at deconstructingdinner.ca or by dialing 250-352-9600.